Welcome to the Media Meeting. I'm Dawn Morgan in studio. Very interesting guests and just an incredible, mind-boggling opportunity that is available now. The exhibit that is open at Western Heritage Museum. We've talked about it a lot, and it did not disappoint. I can tell you, as as we speak, we've had the opening. In terms of the pre-events, you know, the VIP party, the membership party, all of that, just really special opportunities for people to get in and see this. A little ahead of the public, but now it is open, and we want to say very, very, very much thanks to Mark Locke, who is in studio and has been a big part of the launch of this exhibit, along with Daryl Beecham, the executive director of the Western Heritage Museum, where you find Titanic, the Artifacts Exhibition. So welcome in, gentlemen. Thank you for coming in.
Good to be with you, Don.
Thanks for having us.
Mark, I know that you serve as Senior Vice President of Arts and Exhibitions International, but here, what is your official capacity with this exhibit at the Western Heritage Museum?
Well, one of the exhibitions we're most proud of is Titanic, the Artifact Exhibition, and that's the exhibit that's here now in Hobbs. And I act as the creative director, if you will, putting together the experience, the exhibition itself, work, of course, with an amazing team that take care of these amazing pieces of history, these artifacts, 100 of them, more than that on display here in Hobbs. And it's an exhibition, obviously, we're very proud of, but we take the responsibility very seriously as well. These are artifacts recovered from the ocean floor, brought to the surface, conserved, and now on display to the public. And the story itself is something you feel a responsibility to, because this is a human story. This is a story that started very optimistically and ended with such a tragic fate, if you will. And that when you have that in your hands, when you're charged with representing that in an exhibition, you take that responsibility very seriously.
Now, you're a man who, when you speak, you're talking about the exhibit, but you have seen the items and the Titanic from a very different perspective, one that very few people on this planet have had. And you're a man who has actually dived the wreck of the Titanic, right?
Yeah, yeah. And it, you know, when you say it, it's a little unbelievable to me as well.
I did. You look around and say, wow,
right.
Wow, that's really cool.
I did that. Can I have your autograph?
Yeah. It was one of those things that was very unexpected, you know. There are folks on this planet that are deep sea divers, and there are ocean researchers, and there are experts of the Titanic and the story. And I suppose I'm a little now in the category, the latter category there, of knowing about the story. But it came very unexpectedly, the invite. When I was putting these exhibitions together, the company RMS Titanic Incorporated, part of Premier Exhibitions, asked me, do you think it would be helpful to go down and see the wreck of the Titanic firsthand? And I said, yes, it would be very helpful. Yeah. And that happened. And it was the most amazing experience of my life. Just something very dramatic, very emotional, very exciting. It was our last artifact dive to the wreck site. To recover artifacts with the submersibles, where a manned submersible goes down to the ocean floor. And, you know, you're out there in the middle of the North Atlantic Ocean, and you're with all these experts and researchers that have devoted their lives to telling the story of the Titanic. I felt very privileged to be included in that, let alone when they announced the dives. And I found out my name was on that list, and I was going to climb in one of those submersibles. And that in itself is a little daunting if you're not used to it. I mean, these submersibles, and if some of your listeners have seen James Cameron's feature film, right, Titanic, which most of us are very familiar with at the beginning, he uses the same research vessel, the big Russian vessel with the Mir 1 and the Mir 2, those orange and white submersibles. Those are the submersibles he used to go down and shoot his footage, and also the ones that we use to recover the artifacts. And climbing inside of one of those, it's like sitting, like the three of us, if you will, sitting in the front seat of a very small car.
Oh, my goodness.
For 12 hours as you go 2.5 miles below the ocean's surface. And climbing inside and kind of finding my spot off to the side there, kind of curled up, not a comfortable situation at all through those long hours. But then when they screwed the hatch down above us and I knew this was real, you know, a little out of my element, they pick up the sub, they put it into the North Atlantic Ocean. It was a very calm ocean that day, I thought, until you're inside this ball, basically, that's bouncing around and you're kind of holding on to the sides. But then the descent starts very quickly. And, there are three portholes, three acrylic 6 inches in diameter, but also six inches thick. But they flare out in such a way that if you get your face right up to it, you've got a complete peripheral vision is there. So as I'm looking out this blue, and we start the descent, very almost a Caribbean blue that morning. We start our descent, and within 15 minutes, the blue fades to black. And for the next 2 hours, because the sunlight no longer is reaching that depth, you're virtually in the dark. And, a few instruments are on, so you've got a little bit of that glow inside. But it becomes very, a little scary, to be honest.
A little claustrophobic.
Claustrophobic, yeah. Fortunately, that's not an issue for me. But as we are descending, it's getting colder and colder in the sub because the water outside the sub is getting colder, and it's transferring through the six-inch thick titanium ball that you're sitting in. And as I've mentioned before, condensation builds up because
temperature fluctuation
exactly,
is so much, right?
That's right.
From inside to out.
Yeah, and you don't really, you notice maybe a little bit of mist and dew here and there, but there was one moment that took me a little off guard, and that's when one of those drops of water decided to release from the ceiling of the sub and hit me in the back of the neck. And there was definitely that moment of there is an issue right now. There is a problem. And fortunately, I didn't say anything because at that depth, about a mile down, you're in trouble. You're done if there's a hole in the sub. And fortunately, it was just that condensation. But as we keep making our way down, you're putting on another jacket and another jacket. You've already taken your shoes off when you left, so you're putting another pair of socks on just to stay warm. You're seeing your breath. Yeah. It's uncomfortable, like I said, but very exciting. And as I was looking at the meter, the gauge, if you will, counting us down to that depth, okay. I think it was about 3,843 meters where we felt this very light touchdown on the ocean floor. And the pilot gestured to my porthole as if to say, take a look. And I got my face up to that acrylic and looked out, and still looking out into complete black. Right. And I heard the switch of the lights turn on. The lights came up slowly, and there was the bow of the Titanic right in front of me. Oh. And obviously exciting. And we started to what almost felt like flying right up the bow stem and then right over that railing, that iconic railing. One of the things we talked about the other day, Titanic fell 2.5 miles. It basically broke in half at the surface. Right. And these two large sections of the biggest moving object ever made by the hands of man, they're falling to the ocean floor. They end up about a third of a mile apart. Well, the Titanic could have landed on its side or its other side or upside down,
right.
But it landed upright and proud. So mm-hmm. when you see it there on the ocean floor, it still has this majestic look of sailing. And that experience of seeing it that way was overwhelming.
It feels a bit like it created its own memoriam, with a regal, and it landed in a regal way.
Well said. Well said. That's great. It actually does. It still is a very proud ship, even though it met this tragic fate.
Well, amazing. And congratulations for not yelling out at the moment you felt that,
exactly.
that drop. Yelling out, we're leaking, we're all going to die.
Yeah.
Get me out of here.
The
Russian sub-captain might have had, a few words of his own.
Yeah. My guess is he maybe others have experienced it before. This guy, by the way, he went down. He's been to the Titanic more than anybody. So for him, I won't say it's a casual event, but there's a calmness that he brought to it all as well. And I was happy for that.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah. Well, tell me about the challenges of bringing a large show mm-hmm. To such a small venue. I am told that this show, even though this is one of the smaller traveling shows, mm-hmm. this show does not normally come to a place with fewer than a million in population. Is that right?
Well, over the years, we've had the privilege to take this around the world, and it's the type of show and it's the type of story that attracts a lot of people. So naturally, you're going to go to large markets and large venues. But it's a story also that, the way it connects with people is not restricted to those markets. So as we now have the opportunity to work with venues that show the enthusiasm, the commitment, the professionalism that Darrell's Museum does, we are excited to bring it to places maybe that haven't seen the exhibition or had the opportunity. And the venue, and Darrell can talk about this, but the venue is a beautiful venue. It's a really world-class museum right here in Hobbs. And We were able to make it work. I've realized after going through the other day, you know, we have 100 artifacts, which successfully and very well tell the story. So it's an experience. In fact, last night when we had our opening or one of our events, folks were saying, this keeps going on? You mean there's more? So it doesn't feel small, and it tells the whole. It's still a very theatrical experience with a recreation of the first-class cabin, of a third-class cabin. There's an iceberg to walk up and touch and put your hand on and kind of get that sensory experience a little bit. So, it's a privilege to be here and bring this exhibition that's been around the world here to Hobbs.
Is there one piece in particular that really gives you, that speaks to you more than any of the others, that you feel represents the feeling or the spirit of this exhibit?
That's the classic name your favorite child kind of question, isn't
right,
it?
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think the ones that connect with me and connect with most people, the objects, are the ones that we know who they belong to. You know, a porthole is powerful, and a third-class mug. China is amazing that it's survived, or a chandelier that's bent and twisted from the wreckage. But when you know who these objects belong to, that's pretty powerful. And we recover these objects from an area called the debris field. We talked about the two sections of the ship,
right.
But the debris field is the area around. We don't go and cut off the railing of the ship or pull a davit off the deck of the ship. These are pieces that have landed, and they're thousands, landed around the wreckage. And whenever we come across something leather, and by that I mean a suitcase or a wallet or a purse or a satchel, you know something personal is inside, and many times you know who they belong to. And you also know that what's ever inside is going to be well preserved, because it turns out the chemicals used to tan leather actually repel the microorganisms that otherwise would eat away at a postcard, a love letter, a document,
textiles,
shoes,
fabrics, paper.
That's
anything
it.
Like
organic.
That.
Anything
right.
organic.
Right.
So, finally, to your question,
yeah.
In this exhibition, there is a case that's very near and dear to me. When we were out on the dive at the end of the day, when the submersibles return in the dark, by the way, that's very dramatic as well. As the lights are turned on, you see these little blips of blue light pop up out of the ocean. It's brought to the ship. The crane picks it back up. And then the pieces that have been recovered by the robotic arms are now stored in these retractable trays or bins underneath the sub. Well, those bins are extended, and the professionals that handle the artifacts remove them and bring them to our lab. And one of the most interesting pieces this particular night was this leather satchel almost. It was like a small sleeping bag. I mean, smaller than any sleeping bag, maybe only about a foot across, rolled up on itself. And we brought it into the lab, and it was untied and unrolled. And hard to describe this because it all happened at once, but as it was unrolled, we all noticed 64 very small glass vials with liquid inside, a cork on top of each one, and a paper label attached to each vial. And those paper labels read lavender, rose, lemon.
Scents. Fragrance.
Perfume.
Right.
But the amazing thing was, the second that it was unrolled, not only did we see it, the fragrances filled the room. And it was overwhelming, because you weren't expecting that,
right.
You know? In fact, sometimes things come out of the ocean after close to 100 years. They're not going to smell that great,
right? Yeah.
But this was a beautiful thing. And then what we found out in the weeks to come, that leather satchel was stamped with the name Saalfeld & Company. Adolf Saalfeld, a perfume salesman traveling to the United States to sell his wares to the department stores in New York City.
Oh, remarkable.
So, yeah, it's those kind of personal items and stories. And you don't have to be in that room that I was in on the ship to experience that same sort of thing.
Amazing that this, I think anytime you have more than one sense involved.
Yes, good.
We look at things and we're overwhelmed and we're intrigued by them. But when you bring in the smell, when you bring in another scent, and that is the most powerful in terms of evoking, you know, human memory and emotion. Anyway, is the sense of smell.
That's great, Dawn, because I've experienced it. But to phrase it that way, that sense of smell, the way we interact as human beings, is very powerful, isn't it? So, yeah, it was a great moment.
That's terrific. And so many moments. I mean, that, as you said, a remarkable experience. And we could talk for hours about this. And I would love to, but we...
I was on the bottom 8 hours. Yeah. We have an 8-hour show? That would be great if that's possible.
My goodness.